Welcome back to HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen here. Well, there's been much written about the concept of mindfulness in the past several decades, much of it linked to the practice of meditation and the seeking of some higher wisdom or enlightenment. But according to recent studies, psychologists have found that mindfulness is actually much more about harnessing the power of the mind and the power of concentration. Well, here with me this morning with some more on the subject is Dr. Kaushal Nanavati, assistant professor of family medicine at Upstate Medical University and the director of integrative medicine at the Upstate Cancer Center. Welcome, Dr. Nanavati. Thanks for coming back.
Thank you, Linda, for having me.
And I want to remind our listeners that you were here a couple weeks ago, and we started talking about some of this as part of your four pillars of wellness as the spiritual component of it. We were talking a little bit about how people, some of your patients, for example, could begin this process of mindfulness or simple meditation technique.
And the idea is that most of us are often living yesterday or tomorrow. And the idea of being in the moment, the idea of mindfulness is about being present, appreciating now for what it is, and living the life now. So with my patients, oftentimes I'll talk to them about doing a deep breathing exercise where they can take 10 minutes. And during that time, they breathe in and out through their nose, breathing out through their mouth, with the abdomen protruding out as they breathe in and then coming back in as they breathe out.
As a way of beginning this whole process of learning how to do it. But what I think is so interesting is that finally our Western experimental psychologists are starting to explore this, which is a tradition, obviously, that began in Buddhism and Hinduism way before that. For thousands of years, people have found the benefits of this. But now the psychologists are kind of putting their spectacles on and looking at this process, and they're finding that incredible changes take place in an inability to concentrate, inability to be flexible in the way you undertake tasks. And especially, it seems so important in what we consider a multitasking world.
That's right. And so the idea of multitasking is one that, when you really think about it, we don't multitask. What we do is open up a bunch of tasks and then jump back and forth. And so what happens is efficiency goes down, our ability to recall what we did goes down, our retention of the material that we were exposed to during that time goes down. And so this recent article in the New York Times talked about Sherlock Holmes and the ability for him to focus on a single point and then still to be aware is the idea of flexibility of the mind. And mindfulness is a method by which people can gain more flexibility versus rigidity.
So the ability to quiet your mind, focus your attention on the present, and in a way dismiss the distractions that seem to intrude.
That's right.
Really, in a sense, highly focus, almost like a laser, focus your mind.
And then when you practice this over time, you can do this for a longer time period. So when they did some of the studies, one of the things they found was that people that had experience in practicing mindfulness were able to retain their activity and information much longer afterwards. They were able to be more efficient in completing tasks, and they were much more satisfied with the outcomes than were those that seemed very stressed when they were trying to, quote, multitask.
So there were really even more positive emotional states that were achieved as a result of doing this kind of behavior.
That's correct.
So there's kind of a myth, a great myth, when we talk about multitasking as something that we would want to achieve, that in fact it's actually a negative.
Right.
To truly multitask, to try to do 10 things at once or
right.
5 things at
once. It doesn't have a positive effect on the individual, nor does it on the organization. So while, you know, it's been a great phrase to be used on resumes and as resume building, the reality is those that are able to achieve greater focus tend to be more efficient as well.
And also flexible, which I think was your point.
That's
so
correct.
This sounds like it would also have some implications for the mind as we age. Is that true?
That's correct. So some of the things they found with people who have been exposed to mindfulness training for even 8-week periods is that you can actually rewire your brain. You can actually enhance change in the brain. We used to think that in our 20s, our brain was fully developed and that was it. It was a rigid structure. What we now know is that you actually create new neural networks, new highways, exchange of information that allow us to transform not only who we are, but biochemically and what our thoughts are. one part of the brain, the prefrontal cortex, is one that they actually studied and found that doing these types of exercises, simple things, will actually allow people to thicken that part of the brain, which normally, as our body ages, tends to get thinner and has an impact on our mentation as well.
So by making it thicker, you're basically keeping it younger? Is that the idea?
That's correct. You're giving yourself more reserve for longer life in terms of the quality of your life, the quality of your thoughts, the quality of your mentation.
It's very interesting. It's really suggestive that mindfulness activities may even be prophylactic against things like Alzheimer's.
That's definitely potential, and those are the things that are being studied now. We always tell people that, you know, doing things like crossword puzzles, reading, engaging in activity that are actually involving of you in multiple senses were ways to try to keep the brain young. We know we all get older, but doesn't mean we have to get old in the perspective of being rigid.
It's very interesting because in addition to those kinds of the fact that we can achieve certain psychological, skills and cognitive functioning, but also it sounds like there's some emotional payoff as well.
That's correct. So for people who have depression, people that have anxiety, practicing mindfulness, doing deep breathing activities, even for 10 to 15 minutes a day, over a time frame of even several weeks, actually allows people to be not only more self-aware, but self-accepting, and also to understand that this moment is not one that's hurtful to me. So that if I can have peace in this moment, and I can build many moments like this together, now I have a much more peaceful life versus being depressed about something in the past that maybe I can't control anymore. So that not only helps with stress management, but also has a physical, biological benefit. Even 10 to 12 minutes of deep breathing daily can reduce the blood pressure by 5 to 10 points for an entire 24 hours. That has excellent implication for cardiovascular disease, for things like strokes, and for overall health and wellness. We also know deep breathing actually helps to get more oxygen into the body and helps to blow off carbon dioxide. We know that carbon dioxide retention in the brain can lead to anxiety attacks, which is exactly what happens when we're stressed. We tend to shallow breathe. We don't blow off the
hyperventilate.
That's correct. And that's when carbon dioxide retention leads to a lot of consequences.
It's so interesting. I think we've known for many, many years the relationship between mind and body. But here's a situation where you can harness the power of the mind to actually heal the mind and help the body at the same time.
Well, and so the thought that I had this morning as I was thinking about our talking was simply that instead of looking or thinking I have the solution or I need the solution, I can be the solution. I am the solution. And by that, what I mean is that ultimately we choose. And if we choose peace as the guiding principle when we make decisions in our life, then what ends up happening is that the choices we make are all grounded in peace internally. And ultimately, that can lead to peace in relationships as well. And that can translate into community. That can translate into organization. So there's a fascinating domino effect that can occur when you start with yourself and build a strong foundation for
yourself.
That's
a beautiful world vision, in fact. I mean, but what you're suggesting is that if each of us engage in this kind of behavior and find some sense of peace within, that then that will carry over to our relationships, will be both a role model, will affect others, and then it kind of spins out from there to all of our relationships in our community.
Yeah, and it sounds very simple and simplistic and idealistic. And at the same time, when you look at medical science, when you look at what the research we're talking about is getting back to, it's getting back to focusing on the now. It's getting back to focusing on the self. And the idea that selfish is a bad thing, you know, is kind of archaic when you think that selfish can also mean self-care, self-love, and self-respect.
It's interesting that you mentioned that because many years ago in my own kind of journey, I came up with the term for myself, self-full, because this whole idea of concentrating on the self had the implication of being selfish, which is negative. But the fact is, in order to do these kinds of things, you really do need to focus on the self and be more full of yourself in order to move forward in these positive ways.
Well, when you think about people like Gandhi, Martin Luther King, Mother Teresa, they were so selfless, so giving of themselves to the world. But in order to get there, they had to have been selfish at first to have found their inner peace. So selfish when doing harm to others is a bad thing. selfish when loving yourself is not a bad thing, when taking care of yourself is not a bad thing.
So when you say as part of your spiritual four pillars, the fourth pillar being the spiritual one and finding peace, or even this idea of you have to choose peace or the other, each person has to determine what that peace is for themselves.
That's correct.
And the way to get there.
That's right. It's an individual definition, and it's dynamic, right? When you're 10, what peace may mean to you is different than when you're 25, when you're 40, when you're 70. And so the idea is being self-aware, regularly taking the time to be self-aware, will allow you to be grounded in your own reality, but it will also allow you a chance to know what your goals are, what your expectations are, and what your tolerance is. And that makes it much easier in relationships, makes it much easier in the way in which you carry yourself in daily life.
So peace and self-awareness come from this idea of mindfulness and meditation, as well as all these other things we've been alluding to, which is clarity of mind, flexibility of mind, ability to shift from, well, shift or to adequately shift from project to project without being scattered in a way and being most effective.
That's exactly
all those
right.
things.
That's exactly
so. So start, help us when you would say to a patient, what I was thinking was so many people would be put off by this whole notion of meditation. I've had many people say to me, I can't sit still that long.
That's right.
Or this makes me uncomfortable. And also this whole notion of it being tied to a religious tradition of some kind is off-putting to some people who have other religious connections or have no religious connection. So what do you say to those people?
So the idea is, I mean, when you think about it, even doing the rosary in Christianity is a type of meditative thought. You know, we sometimes get caught up with words and where they originate from in terms of cultural context, but the reality is it's a way of defining something. So deep breathing activity has to do with focus on the now. And the ability to increase your ability to concentrate, the ability to appreciate the moment for what it is. And that doesn't have any spiritual connection. It doesn't have any religious connection. It's about the present moment. It's about you as a person and your connection to your life.
About 40 years ago, Herbert Benson, who is a cardiologist in Boston, wrote a book called The Relaxation Response. And he looked through, he was inspired by the work of people who were doing transcendental meditation, and he looked at these Harvard medical students and put them through the paces and found real physiologic changes when they would just sit and do the kind of thing you're talking about. So there were real changes both in the body and its blood pressure and all the things you were alluding to that happen that enable us to then feel a certain way and be healthier overall.
I believe that's exactly right.
And it didn't have any religious connotations or...
That's right. And I think those types of studies are ones that are going to open people's eyes to the fact that this is not a religious thing. Though thousands of years ago, there were books written about the same thing. You know, whether it be the Hindu Vedas or whether it be Mayan tradition or whether it be the Native American tradition, all cultures have a very connectedness. And it's all very parallel. So you can use any language that makes you feel comfortable, but this concept isn't new. It's the truth. And that's what we're getting back to.
And people are learning that if they can initiate this kind of response in themselves on a daily basis, perhaps, or regularly, there'll really be tremendous benefits, both in their mind and their body and their spirit.
That's correct.
So I want to thank you so much for coming in. My guest has been Dr. Kaushal Nanavati, Assistant Professor of Family Medicine at Upstate Medical University, and he is also the Director of the Integrative Medicine Program at Upstate Cancer Center. We'll be right back right after this short break.